I'm in the car game. I know how this works. I've purchased over 30 vehicles and I was forced to go through this unfortunate situation. Imagine if your mom or your aunt or your grandmother or your uncle went through the situation and they didn't know better. They would have been taken, right? They would have paid the full $5,000 or they would have gone with the Ford financing and stuck with it. Or who knows, they would have paid the $30,000 markup. I mean, the dealership would have taken advantage of somebody harder had they not been able to fight back even to the degree that I did. And so I think then people started realizing, wow, we've all kind of been there at one time or another where someone was slightly taken advantage of or misled. And I think people just really resonated. I think it's the fact that they could see their family members potentially being taken advantage of by a brand and a marquee that probably is very relatable, that everyday people are involved in. And that, I think, upset people.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Higher Standard Podcast, where we give you ultra-premium, unfiltered truth when it comes to building your wealth and curating the lifestyle of your dreams. No games, no drama, and no shenanigans. I am your host, Chris Nahibi, and I'm here to help you distill the immense amount of information and disinformation out there on the interwebs and give you the opportunity to choose a higher standard for yourself. There are no gurus here, and no one gives a damn about how wealthy you look. I'm an attorney and a banker, amongst other things. Does that mean you should listen to me? Hell no. This is just full disclosure that while we talk about money, wealth, law, investing, and a lot of related topics, you should always speak to your own advisors for an opinion tailored to your unique investment perspective. I am obligated to tell you that nothing contained in this show is in fact legal or investment advice and is being provided solely for entertainment purposes. So sit back, relax your mind, and get ready for a different kind of podcast where we elevate your baseline in crispy, high-resolution audio. This isn't a different standard, it's the higher standard. Those of you who know me, one of my passions outside of, you know, obviously the higher standard being the amazing podcast that it is, has always been car building. I've always loved cars since I was a kid. My first time picking up a tuner magazine, I'll never forget the, I think it was a yellow and red Honda Civic that was just completely modified in a way I'd never seen. It blew my mind. I've always been a fan of cars. You guys know that I'm building two cars. I had the Datsun that was supposed to go to SEMA, didn't get there. I had the BMW that was supposed to go to SEMA, didn't get there. It is by far and away the largest car show in the world, and a lot of custom car builders go there, and a lot of people in that community know one another. I actually, you know, despite the fact that I've never actually made it, have stayed very, very close to the scene and a lot of people there just because it's something that I love. I love cars, and I love the people that are building them, and I think it's a beautiful creative process. Daniel K. Song has been on that circuit for quite some time. He's got a number of exceptional cars that have been there, and my favorite, the Datsun. You should check it out if you get some time to check out his social media profile. But he had a pretty rough experience recently at an unnamed Ford dealership, and I caught wind of it the same way everybody else did via, you know, him kind of messaging people via the stories function on Instagram. He was just kind of vocalizing his frustrations with a transaction that had kind of went sideways. It didn't really turn out the best possible, you know, resolution right away. He got a good resolution towards the end, but I invited him onto the podcast to share his story because there's a lot of learning lessons along the way. And it goes to show you that you don't have to be sophisticated or unsophisticated. I mean, everybody gets taken advantage of. Sometimes things happen, and it's really about your emotional maturity and how you choose to handle it that can ultimately bring you an outcome that's positive. And I think we got one for Daniel here, and I say we as in the zeitgeist of the car community, but there's a lot to learn here. There's a lot to unpack, and I want to say thank you again to Daniel before we even start, because for him to come on, take time out of his day, his business, not for self-promotion purposes, but to help educate, was truly a blessing, and I really appreciated his time. This podcast was a fun one because it actually is a meaningful story that if you take the time to listen to, that may help you one day when you buy a car. Let's jump into it. Daniel, I appreciate you being on. I've been a huge fan of yours from the car building world for a very, very long time. And I was sad to see what happened to you. And I thought this would be a wonderful opportunity to kind of talk about what happened, your experience from an entrepreneur and a car guy's mindset, and to really get, you know, kind of a warning out there to people of what's going on in the consumer economy right now.
Yeah. So again, I appreciate you having me on and just sharing this platform to be able to kind of share the story. I had no idea in my wildest imagination that this little sort of incident would get so big and kind of garner the attention that it has. But if it creates a positive outcome, I'm all for it. So I guess to kind of understand what's going on, it's a combination of a couple of things, right? So one, on day one, when Ford announced the new Bronco, there was a massive sort of like surge on their website to build and sort of secure your deposit with the Bronco. And I got lucky enough that I was on the website early, refreshing. And I finally got to place an order and luckily enough was able to get the first edition, which at the time was implied as the fully loaded Bronco and would be amongst the early VINs, meaning the early cars delivered off the line. And so I was pretty excited about that because I think the first edition allocations were pretty much sold out within a couple hours of that site going live.
I know they were. I tried to get one myself. And I logged on like an hour or two later, just nothing was there.
Yeah, it was crazy. So, I mean, I got really lucky. So, I mean, again, the whole journey started with a lot of excitement, just the fact that we were lucky enough to secure a first edition. It was really exciting. Then, of course, was the, you know, the patient process of waiting for the car to go into production and following all the updates from Ford.
How long do you think you waited, like, for all that? How long do you think you waited from time of order to, like, you know, production? Like, it was a while, right?
It was about a year, year and a half, maybe. Obviously, early in 2021 is basically when we got to lock our orders, meaning the dealers would then allow us to spec our cars, you know, complete the configuration and the colors. And once that was set, two things were going to be set in stone. Number one is the configuration of your order. And number two was the delivery location of the vehicle, which just kind of comes down to part of the problem. And so at the time, early on, before those things had locked, there was, you know, YouTube videos coming out where people were saying, hey, you know, dealerships might start charging markups on the Bronco because, you know, again, it was a highly anticipated car and we could clearly see that there was a demand for it. And so there were YouTube, you know, dealers on YouTube that were saying, hey, look, we don't charge markups. We're guaranteeing MSRP. So if you want to move your orders, you can move your orders to another dealership before your order locks. And so I took that time as a warning to reach out to, I've never purchased a Ford before. So I locked it in with my local dealership, the one that was closest to me. And I called the Bronco specialist there at the time and said, hey, I'm hearing that there's going to be markups. I want to just kind of confirm with you that there's going to be no markups on my vehicle because obviously I'm going to move my order if there's going to be a markup. And, you know, at the time he replied via email saying, no, there will be no markups. Any orders done through Ford.com will be honored at MSRP. So I was like, great.
Because that was the price. I mean, it's like going on and buying anything from like Amazon. You saw a price, you put a guy in a contract. That was the price you were willing to pay.
And exactly.
That should be what you pay.
Exactly. And you know, while it isn't exactly a formal purchase agreement, you would think that that's sort of, again, a stated price, an agreed price when you hit confirm, place a deposit and place an order. And then to further reinforce that is having a confirmed email from their Bronco specialist saying that this is the price. And so on the day that we locked in our order, I was compelled to move the order, but I was like, man, this dealership is the closest to me. And so I kept the order there. I locked in the order early this year. And then again, we waited around July. I mean, the Bronco had gone through some production delays, but around July, I got notification that my truck was being built. There was a VIN number in the system. We have a kind of an app or an online portal that kind of tracks our cars. And, you know, early Bronco owners were starting to receive their trucks and I was getting really excited and I knew my truck was on the assembly line. And so I figured, hey, you know, about 30 days it's going to take for them to build the truck, put it on a train or a trailer and get it out to California. And so I started confirming with some of the vendors for SEMA. I said, hey, lucky, good news. I have a Bronco. It should be here by late August. It should give us about 2 months to get it ready for SEMA. So we had secured a booth space for the Bronco. It was all getting ready. We had overnight parts coming from Japan, all this exciting stuff happening. And then like maybe about a week, 2 weeks after I got the news that our truck was being built, I woke up to some DMs and people said, hey, is your Bronco affected by this recall? And I was like, what are you talking about? And they're like, did you see the news? And I was like, no, like my truck was already built. It was already on the assembly line. And so people have started sending me links and I woke up to basically an article saying that there was a massive issue or defect with the Bronco hardtops. And so that they would be holding, basically Ford treated it in three groups, right? Their group ones were owners that already had their trucks. Their hardtops would be replaced locally at dealerships as a recall exchange program. Group two owners were people that had their trucks built in Michigan, But because of legal reasons, they can't release or sell that truck until the recall is fulfilled, right?
They had a known defect. They can't
exactly.
sell
a
known
defect, right? Yeah. And it's cosmetic. So like between me and you, it's just kind of like, come on, it's not a big deal. I'll just bump me to group one. But I was part of group two. Group three owners are owners that did not get their cars built. And so their production time was indefinitely in suspended mode because they just didn't know when the hard tops would arrive. And there were speculations saying that the hard tops would arrive in October. And I already knew that that means SEMA is not going to be happening. And so...
Yeah, so for way back, sorry, let's cut in here. So for people who don't understand, SEMA is like the biggest car show in the world. It's an industry only, you know, aftermarket in a lot of ways, but a lot of the manufacturers get in there. And this is a huge, huge thing. So to have vendors and everybody else build this up, you've got a lot of time built into getting relationships together, getting people to sponsor the build. You've got your own money, time, and then SEMA is typically at the end of October, early November. So for you to be on this rush timeline, you're going down a path. There is personal time loss. There's economic, you know, money issues here for you. And now you're in suspense.
Yeah. And so we knew the likelihood was not going to happen, but we were still just kind of holding our breaths because we did start. I have friends, obviously, in the industry, and I have other auto friends that were starting to take delivery of their Broncos. And then, you know, we were seeing and hearing rumors from Bronco forums that the new hardtops were arriving in Michigan. And so, you know, we were holding out. We were like, this could happen. This could happen. And, you know, we started seeing this obscure way where some trucks were being delivered, some weren't. Just to give you an idea, I have a good friend of mine who's also local in SoCal. He got delivery of his Bronco with a hardtop, and his production date was literally 2 days before mine. And so chronologically, I'm like, well, if he got his truck,
mine was built
2 days after. It should be soon, but that was not the case. And so what ended up happening is group two owners, this is a really simplified process. I don't know the exact numbers, but group two owners, their trucks were already built. They were being stored in an outdoor lot for 2 or 3 months. And basically, assembly people would bring a handful of those Broncos from the dirt lot back into the factory to swap the hard tops and then do the QC, clean it up, and then put it on a transport out to you. Group three owners, people that did not have a build date, they were on the main assembly line. So Ford was able to crank out group three owners quicker than they were able to fulfill group two owners. So here's the crazy part. People that did not even have a production date were receiving their Broncos before mine. And I was starting to, this obviously created a little more frustration. But fast forward, ultimately, we knew SEMA was not going to happen. There were some sponsors a little bit disappointed. They knew it was out of my hands, obviously. You know, building with relationships with people and vendors, you want to build a professionalism where if you promise a vehicle that you deliver it the way you propose it, and it's a completed vehicle for them, because they rely on that vehicle to be on display for their product and their services. And so, you know, I felt bad, but there was an early enough notice to let the sponsors know that this was not going to happen. And so, you know, we just were waiting. And then we got the confirmation that in mid-November, they said, hey, Daniel, your Bronco is done. It's going through final QC. It's going to get on a transport and it's going to be out to you. And the estimated delivery date was end of November, December 1st. So now it's time to get excited. The Bronco's finally coming. Light at the end of the tunnel. We knew that this was going to close out the journey. And so we were getting excited. So 3 weeks before the Bronco came, I reached back out to the dealership and said, hey, just wanted to confirm. It looks like my truck's on the way. We're talking MSRP, right? Correct. We just wanted to confirm the numbers. And that's when they let me know the Bronco original Bronco specialist was no longer with that dealership.
Oh, okay? My God.
That's fine.
Already ominous sign number one.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And it happens, right? We know sales. I mean, the turnover in dealerships can kind of happen.
It's the car business. It happens. But at the same time, you had an email from somebody that was a certain level of confidence.
Yeah. And so I, you know, they had connected me with the internet sales manager at the time that she would be now handling it. And so I showed her the previous emails and I said, hey, I just want to confirm. And she said that, well, you know, we're going to be adding sort of a dealer add-on package, which included these like clear boss strips, these 1-inch strips on the edges of your door. You know, I mean, they're just basically dealer junk, right? That has massive profits built into it. And so,
and for you, you're a car builder. You're not going to leave it stock anyway. So that probably has no value to you, right?
Yeah. And come on, a 1-inch strip of clear bra, like to charge me $2,000 for that, that's like ridiculous.
Oh my, $2,000
for it? Yeah. It's ridiculous. Like, I know that these things are padded with massive profits. These are probably like $20, $30 wholesale items that they're charging, like, again, $1,000, $2,000 for.
That, and that takes like literally 10 minutes to install.
Exactly. And so I said, hey, look, I've been promised MSRP, no dealer add-ons. I need to make sure that this is the way I'm going to be receiving my truck. And so I got another email from the internet sales manager saying, confirmed, your car will be honored at MSRP with no dealer add-ons. And she even quoted the name of the GM at the dealership at the time, said the GM approved this. So great, I have my final numbers. I have exactly, and this allowed me to obviously secure my financing with my credit union. It allowed me to get the ball rolling so that everything would be in order when the Bronco arrives. And so the Bronco finally arrives. I get a call. I was emailing the sales manager, actually the internet sales manager, 2-3 days before the Bronco arrived, because obviously there was a delivery window. And I was like, hey, so is the truck there yet? Is it there yet? And, you know, we were just kind of excited and we're waiting. And I got no response from the internet sales manager, which I thought was strange. But finally, the day the truck arrived, a saleswoman had reached out to me and said, hey, your truck is here. It's going through pre-delivery inspections, which is a normal thing, right? The dealer goes through a PDI to make sure the car looks good and it's in a deliverable state. And she said, it's going through PDI. Do you want to show up in a couple hours? And I said, sure, I'll be there. And so I walked down to the dealership. She shows me the truck. It's amazing. It's everything that we were looking forward to. It was exciting to see it there. And so she goes in and she's doing other things, but I'm walking around the truck as I'm looking at it. And I noticed that there's already a sticker posted on the window, right? Next to the traditional window sticker, there's another supplemental sticker that says, you know, 29,995 dealer, like adjusted market value. And then it says 1997 in dealer add-ons. They call it Guardian Shield. And I was like, Wait, 30 grand plus this $2,000. There's a supplemental sticker. And so as soon as the sales rep came out, I said, what is this? And she says, oh, well, you know, they have this up just in case you don't want the car. This is in preparation to potentially sell it.
Okay. So, I mean, that's interesting, but I mean, it's that's a viable excuse on some level.
Yeah. Weird. And I'm like, okay, red flag number one two or three or four. I don't know at this point. And I'm like, wait a minute. Like, you guys are assuming you're going to sell my truck the day that it's arrived. You took it upon yourself to say, hey, just in case you refuse this car, we're going to sell this car for 30 grand markup. And now, don't get me wrong, looking at the current marketplace and looking at the current selling prices of Broncos, they can command the $20,000, $30,000 markup. I'm very confident the dealership could get that, especially on a first edition Bronco. And so these guys, I had this sinking feeling, they want me to walk away from this car right now. And sure enough, when I sat down in the office, she brings the paperwork over and says, okay, so here's the price of your Bronco. There's a $5,000 markup for you, and there's the 1997 in dealer add-on items. This is your total price. And I was like, no, that's not what we agreed to. I have emails from the Bronco specialist. I have an email from your internet sales manager that clearly states that your GM approved MSRP with no markups. And she goes, well, let me find out. So she walks out of the room, comes back and says, you know, the GM says that, you know, every other dealership is doing 20, 30 grand. So 5 grand is actually fair. And I was like, no, I get the concept that you guys think you're doing me a favor, but it's not. You know, I would have moved my order to another dealership had I known that you guys were going to play this game. And so she's like, well, you know, and she was new. I mean, full disclaimer, I think she was there at the dealership like 2 or 3 days. And I said, look, can I speak with the internet sales manager? And I gave her name. And she says, oh, she was let go like 3 or 4 days ago. And I was like,
Oh man.
Like, now, again, all the people that I was in communication with are no longer at that dealership. So there's nobody I can hold accountable minus the GM's name. So I said, well, look, this email clearly says this GM said that this could be happening. The GM never came out of his office. You know, you would think that he would come out and say, hey, sir, here's what's going on. This is why. And maybe try to justify what I consider to be a pretty shady bait and switch, you know?
Well, yeah. And then let's set the tone too. So as more and more, you know, vehicles are getting challenged from a supply demand issue, you know, cars here in general are just going up. Prices are going up. I have a 2015 Jeep. I can almost sell it for what I paid at MSRP now in the current economy, which is bizarre for a used vehicle. But newer vehicles, what they're really doing is saying, okay, this guy's not going to walk away for this amount of money because he's going to get charged 20, 30 somewhere else.
Yeah.
And we can sell it for more money. So it was effectively, I mean, I don't want to call it anything bad, but it was effectively putting you in a very, very terrible position because no way you played that, you won.
Yep. So, I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, look, the current marketplace, it is a seller's market. We know that there's a vehicle shortage, inventory shortage because of the semiconductor issue. That's not going to get resolved anytime soon. So, you know, I mean, you go into any dealership lot, the inventory, I mean, the lot is virtually empty everywhere. You know what I mean? And so, you know, we're seeing used car prices inflated. We're seeing new car prices with MSRP markups. And I want to just say, like, look, I don't like markup games in general, but I understand that, you know, as a business owner, when you control the inventory, you are allowed to do whatever you want, and the marketplace will demand or confirm whether or not they're willing to pay that. I'm okay with markups on dealer allocated inventory cars, in cars that were,
well, if it was disclosed. Yeah. If you walk into a dealership, I walked into a Mercedes dealership the other day, and literally the exact same sticker right next to the MSRP tag, and it said $200,000 markup on this car. And I get it. Like, if you saw that and you're disclosed and you said, I want to get into this contract, but if somebody changes the terms of an agreement, particularly after, you know, two or three communications with you, that's an entirely different animal.
So I want to make it very clear. This is a completely different situation than understanding that the marketplace currently has a lot of vehicles on markup. And so, you're absolutely right. Like, I felt like I was being bullied or handcuffed into a situation that was going to be a lose-lose situation for me, because if they're asking the $5,000 from me plus the dealer add-ons, and I say no and walk away from the deal or refuse the truck after all this time of waiting for it, they get to turn around, put that into their inventory and sell it for $30,000 more. And they actually make more money by me walking away from the truck. Or they get to fleece me and make an extra $5,000 out of the deal that was originally proposed at MSRP. So they kind of sort of win both ways. I kind of lose both ways.
And I want to address the other part of that too, is someone could easily listen to this and say, well, okay, well, you know, Daniel, you could have just walked away and gone to a different dealership and not gotten the markup. Not necessarily true, because the problem is this is a first edition. This is extremely rare. It was the first one out. There's always a bit more desirability in the beginning. So for you to go to another dealership and find a first edition, at that point, they were all sold out. That would have been impossible.
Yep. So it's either impossible, or you're basically, I would have to go to another dealership and pay the $20,000-$30,000 markup on a first edition. I mean, that's the going price on a first edition. And I've seen first edition sold right now anywhere between $85,000 to $90,000, some even at $98,000. So again, when this dealership put on $30,000 as a markup, it's not like they understood where the market was at. They could easily get that for a first edition. And so for me to walk away, there's no way that I would jump into another equivalent car without paying that $30,000.
See, I put that on Ford though too, that they're, and this is weird, this is the industry thing, right? So they're trying to create a buzz. They're trying to pre-sell the vehicles. It's a good business strategy for them. It's a good marketing strategy for them. They pre-sell the vehicles. They go down this path. If it should easily been, if they wanted to, subject to the then in place MSRP, could have been an easy disclosure to put up. But that wasn't there, and it's not there on any vehicles. Nobody does that, because that's just not the way the business is carried out.
Yep. So you could argue pro and con, whatever. But you know, Tesla has a very straightforward system. You order it, and that's exactly the price you pay. You know, and so the fact that, again, like I said, I was in a situation where I was sitting at the dealership, my truck's right there in front of me, and I can see the clear intention that they're trying to sell the car for $30,000 to someone else. I called my wife and I was like, babe, this is an awful feeling in my stomach, but I got to figure out a way to get this truck out of here with the least amount of damage as possible. So we negotiate for 3.5 hours, and finally, the dealership says, okay, we're going to get rid of the $5,000 markup. We can't do anything about the 1997 because it's already on the car, which again is ridiculous because it's like 5-10 minutes to put it on. But they said, look, the 1997's on there, but we'll get rid of the $5,000 markup under one condition. And I said, well, what is that condition? Keep in mind, I had a pre-approved credit union financing for 1.99% on a new car. They said that they wanted me to go through Ford financing.
See, but that bothers me right there. That really just tells you this is about money.
Yep, it is. So Ford financing, obviously, one, the rate that I was getting is 5.99%. So again, for any consumer, like, why would you pay an additional 4%? Like, that's stupid. You know what I mean? It's not even a competitive rate. If it was off maybe by 0.25%, then it's reasonable to consider, right? So we know the game, right? When they finance through Ford, there's going to be some kickbacks on the back end. They're probably going to get something from Ford Finance. So that it allows them to make some money on the back end. And according to what I hear is the number of finances that they secure through Ford, it also potentially prioritizes them for more inventory in the future, because it's a way for Ford to track sales. And so they were doing it for two reasons. Number one, to earn that kickback on the sales through the back end of the program. And then number two, to prioritize themselves for more allocations. And so again, I got on my phone quietly with my credit union specialist and I said, hey, this is the situation I'm in. It's not ideal. What can you tell me? And she's like, look, in California, there's no prepayment penalty.
Yep.
Just do what you need to do. And as soon as your registration arrives, we're going to refi that loan. I mean, my credit union specialist was upset too. She was like, this is complete BS. You know what I mean?
And I would argue 599 is even over market for a new car from a dealership.
It is. It's a pretty high rate. I mean, I say this only just to give it context. You know, I have an 800 plus credit rating. I have I have over 30 vehicles purchased on my credit history. Great DTI. Like, there's no reason why I'm not qualified for the highest or lowest, I guess, APR rate.
If you're getting
rate.
199 from a credit union, it should be pretty obvious that you should get a competitive rate, at least something. I mean, 2% over maybe from a dealership, but 4%, that's just arbitrage of extra profits.
Yeah, and so, so the credit specialists or my credit union at least gave me the confidence to say, hey, just play the game, sign the paperwork, we'll move your loan out in the next 3 or 4 weeks and you'll be fine, right? So I felt okay playing that game. So I said, fine, we'll do the Ford financing, whatever, 1997, whatever, let's do it. And again, in my mind was, this is the lesser of two evils, not to walk away from the car where they make 30 grand and win. I simply pay 1997, go through the little bit of a hassle to refi the loan a little bit later on, and at least I come home with the truck. So again, keep in mind, now we're 4 hours in, I'm frustrated, I'm hungry. And so I'm sitting in the finance department, roll out the contracts, and I'm like, yes, 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 you know, and let me be very clear. It's my fault for not reading line by line. It's my fault, right?
Well, who does at that point? I'm an attorney by trade, and I got to be honest with you, I don't do that either.
And again, after 30 vehicles purchasing exotics and supercars, like, I don't do it. I'll be very clear because I've never had something snuck into a contract that wasn't disclosed. So for me, why would I bat an eye at a Ford product or, like, you know what I mean, an everyday consumer product? So it's my fault, but I went through, signed the contracts, came home, and I said, yes, we have the car, walked out of the dealership, brought it home, and shared with my wife. And, you know, she was excited about the car, but, you know, she, being my wife, she's much more like detail oriented. She goes through the contract and she said, hey, how much was the add-ons, you know, the dealer add-ons that you agreed to? I said, $1,997. I showed her the picture of that little supplemental sticker that shows the items I bought, and it was $1,997. She's like, no, you didn't pay $1,997 for that. I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, look at your contract. Outside the MSRP, all the cash accessories adds up to almost $2,792, almost $2,800. You paid an additional like $800, $900 on top of it. And sure enough, there's a line item where it's just an obscure cash accessory item. It doesn't even describe what it is.
What the hell does that even mean?
I don't know, but it's like $800 tagged right in there. And I'm like, oh my, and that's when it infuriated me. I'm like, it's like salt to a wound. Like, not only did I agree to pay $19.97 for what is probably a $40 worth of products, but you snuck in an extra $800 in your favor. And I was so upset by it. So that was a Friday night. I went on social media and I just wanted to vent my situation, right? I didn't know what it would turn into, but I was just upset. And I said, hey, look, Ford dealership, absolute garbage. You know, this is my experience. This is what happened. Whatever. And I just kind of shared my story about what happened. I went to sleep on Friday, woke up Saturday to just tons of people tagging me, using the @ signs on Instagram. And I'm like, what is going on? All these DMs.
And that's when I first heard about this. This is Friday night. I was in bed next to my wife and I was like, what in the, and I was just, I went off on it. And I'm one of the people who commented on the dealership side, Instagram page. I'm one of the people who reposted it. And I think a lot of other people did. And it wasn't because there was some sense of loyalty to you or to anybody else. It was just like, this is such a shocking thing. People should know.
Yeah. And I think, you know, two reasons it kind of went to where it did. Number one, even to this day, I've never activated the social media crowd to say, hey guys, let's all go slam their social media account. Let's all go out there and do stuff. Like, I'm not the person that activates like a mob mentality, right? You know, that would be kind of like
But you didn't have to. You're a good guy and bad things happen to you, and that resonates with people.
I think number one, people genuinely felt a sense of relatable pain, right? People felt like, wow, that they really took advantage of you, and that upsets me. So I'm gonna take it upon myself to pick up the metaphoric pitchfork and axe and really go after this dealership. But I think the second part that people really resonated with is the fact is, you know, I said, hey, like, look, I'm in the car game. I know how this works. I've purchased over 30 vehicles, and I was forced to go through this unfortunate situation. Imagine if your mom or your aunt or your grandmother or your uncle like went through the situation and they didn't know better. They would have been taken, right? They would have paid the full $5,000, or they would have gone with the Ford financing and stuck with it. Or who knows, they would have paid the $30,000 markup. I mean, the dealership would have taken advantage of somebody harder had they not been able to fight back, even to the degree that I did. And so I think then people started realizing, wow, like, we've all kind of been there at one time or another where someone was slightly taken advantage of or misled. And I think people just really resonated. I joke around with my wife. If I was at a Lamborghini dealership taking delivery of a brand new Aventador, and I said, oh my God, the dealership's charging me a markup, I think people would have said, yeah, that's first world problems, Daniel. Like, we don't care. Nobody would have cared. I think it's the fact that they could see their family members potentially being taken advantage of by a brand and a marquee that probably is very relatable, that everyday people are involved in. And that, I think, upset people. And so there was this massive activation. I had a lot of, obviously, friends, you know, with pretty decent social platforms that were sharing it and resharing it. People were all over that Ford Instagram, the dealership's Instagram page. They were tagging Ford. They were tagging the corporate accounts. I mean, it was crazy. And it was amusing at first because I was just like, oh, holy cow. Like, this is what I'm waking up to on Saturday. And then, of course, the social media deletes that first post. And then it 10Xs the anger from the mob because they're like, look, they deleted it. It means that they're even that much more shady. And so,
social media 101, never delete the post that causes the conflict, address the post that causes the conflict.
So then people move on to the next post and the next post, and there, two posts had come down. And then on, I think it was on Sunday, there was a local cars and coffee event, and a good friend of mine, and he's the friend that actually took delivery of the Bronco 2 days before mine. And he reached out to me. He's like, hey, I'm at a cars and coffee. And I ran into the guy. He's a mutual friend of his. He says, I ran into the guy who runs that dealership's social media account. The dealership doesn't run it at local. They hire a social media firm to represent and market their Instagram. And so that person had wanted to connect. So I gave them the number. We got on a phone call, and he said, hey, like, it's crazy, like, but I 100% understand what you're going through. Let me see if I can help, like, mediate the situation between the dealership and you. And so on Monday, he reached out to the dealership to explain what's going on. Because keep in mind, when you have a third party firm that's handling your social accounts, it means that the dealership is not fully aware of what's going on, unless they're checking their Instagram, right? Because that means there's nobody internal that's managing their content. So they don't know the firestorm that started over the weekend. You know what I mean? They don't know the number of comments and the reshares and all this stuff.
And it's a dealership. So there's not a tremendous amount of, you know, interaction on. So there's not a lot of engagement on their account. Their account is just there to say, have a living business card.
Exactly. And you, that's exactly right. So there isn't a huge engagement. There isn't a huge investment on their part to make it a big asset for them. And so, you know, the social media account guy calls me back on Monday and says, hey, the GM that kind of was in charge of your deal, he just got let go. And I'm like, what the heck? This is crazy. Like, now he's the last person that could technically be held accountable for the deal because he was the GM there the whole time, and he's now gone. And so I said, hey, was he fired because of this deal, this botched deal, or was he fired for other reasons? He's like, look, I'm not sure, but he's gone now. And I'm like, well, that's kind of a dead end now. You know, anybody who can be held accountable is technically gone. From what I'm hearing from people is the owner of the dealership is very disassociated with the dealership. Other than owning it, he's not there on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, again, I was kind of contemplating my options, and I saw, that's when I threw up that proposal, by the way. Like, so, I mean, obviously the way they could right the wrong is obviously to acknowledge it and refund my money. That's number one, which was originally the initial kind of thing that I wanted, right? For them to just simply refund my money.
Normal response. But I love the way this evolves. So tell everybody how you came up with the idea and then ultimately the resolution that you were seeking and how it happened.
So because this whole thing like snowballed well outside of my sphere of influence, right? Like, I mean, obviously so many people took it upon themselves to pressure their social accounts. They were on review sites. They were like, you know, advising me. There were people like ex-employees and people that knows the dealership that was sending me like internal emails, which again, I didn't share any of it because again, every story does have a two sides. So I felt like it was unfair to share that content, but there was enough consistent evidence/experiences to say, this is a very rampant practice in this dealership. You know what I mean? There doesn't seem to be a high level of transparency and honesty and integrity. And so because there were so many people that got involved in the whole campaign, I felt very compelled to say, hey, if there's any sort of resolution made, that I should pay that forward. Because, you know, in my position financially, like, look, I'm very blessed. I have, again, multiple businesses. The $2,800 that I ultimately paid to get my Bronco home, it sucks from a principal standpoint, but I don't need that $2,800. Like, it's not going to affect me in a critical way. So I already kissed that money goodbye. So I'm like, look, if this money comes back and it comes back because of every this collective movement, I want to make sure that it doesn't just come back so it lines my pockets. I want to do something with that money. And so I kind of like, you know, I'm understanding a little bit about marketing. I kind of proposed something publicly to the dealership. And I said, hey, why don't, instead of giving me the money back, I'm going to a charity toy drive, the Purist event this past weekend. And I said, hey, why don't you guys, instead of giving me the money back, buy the equivalent amount in toys. Number one, because obviously internally you guys can write it off as a charitable donation or whatever you guys want to do internally, however you want to write it off. Number one, you guys can do that. So from a financial perspective, it's a little bit different than just simply giving me my money. Number two is I'm giving you an opportunity on a silver platter to sort of salvage this unfortunate situation, right? Where you guys can come out of this sort of looking like heroes, like, hey, not only did the dealership do you right and gave you the money back, but they went and did it for charity, right? And so I'm giving them something that I felt like was, dude, this is a win-win for you guys. You have an opportunity to do something and salvage the story, you know?
And as a bystander, when I saw that was kind of like the resolution being sought, I thought for sure, okay, this is the way this is going to go. It was, I'm going to see a post from Daniel and it's going to be, hey, I'm at the Pierce event. Look at all these toys. Like it worked out. And then that didn't happen, right?
Yeah, it didn't happen. It came down to the 11th hour. I heard nothing. And again, like I said, part of the problem was, again, the GM was let go. So accountable parties were no longer there. It was hard. And again, I got to give a shout out again to the social media firm that handles their account. He was meeting. I didn't have any leverage on the dealership. He was helping to mediate the whole situation. And so he finally got through to the CFO of the dealership and explained the situation and said, hey, look, we're getting hit. One hit after another on social media. People are now hitting like review sites and putting up, they're putting up basically sort of false reviews because they're not the buyer, but they're still putting up negative reviews on the dealership.
Again, and just to be clear, you didn't encourage that. It's just people were so outraged that they take it upon themselves. And I'll be the first to admit that the internet is a very unforgiving place.
It is. It is.
Very unforgiving place. Nobody cares who you are, if you're an attorney in the real world or, you know, if you're a famous person. It's a great equalizer. So people will take it amongst themselves to fight back. And they perceive the dealership as being the big, bad, you know, big pockets. And people went a little rogue.
Yeah, they did. And so they were posting negative reviews on review sites. And I mean, it was hurting the dealership, obviously, not immediately, but, it's going to be a lot of PR and cleanup work on the digital footprint that was being left based on all these negative reviews. And so, you know, the CFO finally agreed to cut me basically the balance of the check, you know, whatever was owed to me, they would give me in a combination of checks and a combination of gift cards, which was really weird, but
yeah,
whatever.
I still don't understand that 100%.
I don't either. I'm sure their internal, accountant said, hey, we can maybe only donate up to X amount. So they maximized the donation amount, minimized the actual check to me. I don't know. There's got to be a reason why that amount came out to what it did. You know, they did pad the number a little bit. I mean, I think, again, what was owed to me was $27.92. They ended up, you know, full disclosure, they gave me $3,000 for it. So they gave me a little more. And again, here's the thing. Between me and you, I was like, guys, if you guys really wanted to just really parlay this into a great situation, do a little more than the bare minimum. But, you know, whatever.
The whole thing seemed bizarre. I mean, I guess the conclusion was that things went well at the end, but to get there was a rocky road. But I'm a little confused as to why they didn't take the opportunity, because that PR is still going to be out there on some level and people are still going to have a bad taste in their mouth. So it was a little shocking to see the lack of, I guess, appreciation for the community that responded, because making you whole is one thing, but now the community is offended and there really wasn't, at least it didn't seem like there was an outward measure to make the community come together and say, okay, thank you for doing the right thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And again, that's like I said, we are not entitled to more than what was owed back to me. Obviously, let's be very clear about that. But I felt like they just simply did not understand the opportunity they had to try to clean up or to rectify the situation. Because again, I felt like it was delivered on a silver platter. But, you know, the point was, we got the gift cards. As of the time of this recording, the day before this recording, I did get the gift cards. I did get the check. We've cashed it. And we went on our first two rounds of shopping sprees. It was a fun experience just going up and down the aisles and just dumping basket after basket after basket of toys at Target. We filled a whole Tacoma bed, brought it home. We went to a second place, filled up that bed halfway. We're still probably going to go later today to buy some more. And so at the end of the day, the delivery experience was obviously not ideal, right? And this whole journey to ownership has been less than ideal. my takeaway from all of this is this. I hope, number one, Ford as a corporate company makes some type of changes and improvements so that these don't happen to consumers, right? Especially pre-ordered allocated vehicles that dealerships are very clearly told not to mark up what is already pre-promised to an end user, basically. You know what I mean? So I hope that there's improvement and reform done at the corporate level so that it doesn't happen again. Number two is, you know, I hope that number one, at least this dealership is going to think twice before they say, hey, let's try to take advantage of somebody. Now, I did get a lot of DMs where people said, oh my God, they don't know who they messed with. You know, they don't know your social reach. And look, I am not the guy who believes I'm an influencer or some like social media guy. I'm not a big YouTube guy. I'm not anything. Like I have a passion for cars. I've built an incredible community of supportive people and I appreciate that. But I never would go around going, I'm an influencer. That's the last title I would attach.
I have seen your profile. I haven't seen a bikini photo or you dancing in any weird, strange TikToks. But yeah, but you do have influence and you do command the respect of a lot of people in the space. I've been a fan of yours for a long time just because I love what you do, man. I love the cars. I love you know, kind of the really positive content. I love the driven stuff that you're doing on the side as your side venture. And I think it's all. You can't put all the positive stuff into the zeitgeist of the world that you have and expect people not to find you to be an influential positive force. You know?
Sure, sure. And so hopefully we do it through organic attraction and not through clickbait stuff. You know what I mean? That's big difference for me. But, you know, going back to it is, you know, people are saying, well, you know, I bet you the dealership had no idea the crap storm that would be raised by picking a fight with you. And I said, you know, I know it's well-meaning to say that, but I'm like, look, it shouldn't matter who you are. You know, just because a massive influencer or a celebrity walks through your door, you shouldn't treat them differently than your grandmother who walks in the door that needs to buy a new car. I mean, it's really unfortunate if the mentality is they can classify this is a person I can take advantage of and push a markup on. This person I can't because they have either influence or they have clout or some level of whatever. Like, it shouldn't be done that way. Everybody should be treated with the same level of respect, transparency, and integrity, no matter who they are. And it shouldn't rely on your social media following to determine that, right? So that's number one. Number two is, you know, again, yes, while it wasn't an ideal situation, again, I think we should all look for opportunities to parlay setbacks into, like, obviously, I'm a big believer that a setback can be a great comeback, right? And so in this case, to be able to turn an unfortunate circumstance that really only affected me, right? The markup and the whole 4.5 hours and all this delays and all this stuff really only affects me and my time and my energy and my emotions. But to be able to then parlay that into something that allowed me to then give back on a pretty massive scale, at least for me, I believe it's a pretty massive scale, to be able to do something great and to know that there's going to be that many more children that are going to have toys under the tree this holiday. You know, I'm happy with that. I'm like I said, it wasn't the smoothest journey, but also if it wasn't for this journey, I don't think there would be, you know, $5,000 worth of toys right now, right, getting ready to get distributed right now. You know what I mean? So
I do. And I'll commend you on a couple things that I don't think you really recognize about yourself that I don't think a lot of people would have done. You had an emotional stability, this emotional maturity that through this process where you weren't visceral in your original post. And I don't think I saw anything from you that was really like angry, like visibly. It was just like, I'm upset this happened.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people would have kept that mental calm. And that really is what gave you the clarity to make the right decisions and the right statements. I mean, the stuff about changing the paradigm into a charitable event and using the Purist Group event as a springboard, I thought that was brilliant and really a lack of judgment on their part for not taking you up on it. But throughout that whole process, anybody could have gotten mad along the way and started, you know, going off on a tangent. And I think part of kind of the big overriding moral story here is that you got a lot by being emotionally mature through the process. And because of that, other people, kids will benefit, other consumers who may have been taken advantage of now have awareness being spread. And the community now can look at your leadership and how they would handle something similar.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in a society where, you know, cancel culture and the mob attacks are so rampant, you know, like, I'm not a big believer in the cancel culture. You know, I just, you know, like, look, at the end of the day, we need to recognize that despite poor judgment on the dealership's part, there are real employees there where they're working to feed their families. It's their livelihood. So I'm not like looking to decimate their business to a level where there's no transactions going through their doors and, you know, people need to get laid off. Like, that would be the worst feeling, right? Finding out that our negative impact and our negative reviews shutter that business down so low that people start to get laid off, right? That, like, that would not be what the positive resolution would be. It would be for them to just use it as a learning experience and to use it as an opportunity to reflect and say, hey, maybe I could have done things differently, or as a dealership, we should handle these situations differently, right? But it's not about permanently, you know, giving them a scarlet letter and saying that you guys are deemed no longer a worthy dealership.
And I think a lot of people who know me know that if I really wanted to, I'd go off on an expletive-filled rage. But you and I were trying to be very thoughtful in going into this. And I think I even reached out to you just before this started to say, hey, do we want to do this? And how do we want to make sure this is an educational, useful thing? I want everybody to acknowledge, number one, I'm not happy anybody got fired. I don't think Daniel is either.
Yeah.
You know, the reality is some of these things were seem to be operational deficiencies that were probably way beyond what you experienced. But you just experienced little bits along the way. Mm-hmm. No one in the state of California is generally unilaterally terminated for a single bad act like this, at least in most cases. So there's probably a lot more there that we don't know. And we've gone out of our way to not mention the dealership and not mention the individuals and names. This is truly a learning experience to help other people learn some lessons. Obviously, you learned a lot about how to look at your contract and how, you know, these things work. And hopefully, to your point, Ford, you know, does some sweeping kind of reform, because people don't understand that a lot of these dealerships, in most cases, almost all of them, are franchises.
Mm-hmm.
They're owned by individual operators. So this is not necessarily a bad look on Ford. It's just they have to set the policy on their franchisees to act in a certain way so that the brand isn't damaged by it. But I did have one last question for you. You got a minute. If you got a minute, I want to be mindful of your time. You got the Ford now. I mean, is it not an awesome truck? Or like, I mean, how is it tainted, or do you still love it just as much? Like, what do you
think? I love it. I've been able to compartmentalize the delivery experience and the actual product. You know what I mean? Obviously, we've had the truck now for about a week. It's incredible. I mean, it's got such a presence. I laugh. I'm like, the Bronco gets more looks right now. My wife even included, she's in the passenger seat. I think more people look at the Broncos than any of your SEMA vehicles right now.
It's a cool truck, man.
Ford knocked it out of the park, right? I mean, they went with this sort of like modernized retro styling, which I know a lot of manufacturers are trying to do that, but I feel like they kind of missed the mark, right? You know, again, you know, you get like brands like Land Rover that redesigned the Defender, and it's cool, but it's not the same Defender that we all love. You know, there are some companies that do it really well, and there are some people that kind of miss the mark when they do this sort of modernized retro throwback look. And I you know, there's a reason why Ford had sellouts and website breakages, because the Bronco is an incredible car. And I'm excited. Like I said, I mean, the only reason why I'd get rid of it is to try to get in line for the new Raptor Bronco. That thing looks badass.
That was the one thing that saved my sanity, because I was bitter I missed out on the Broncos. I was like, well, there's always that. Even though John, whose Bronco is at SEMA this year, he convinced me to put an order in for the Rivian, so now I'm on the wait list for that, the truck.
Nice. Yeah, so I mean, like we're excited, and again, like I said, a lot of the supportive sponsors and partners that I work with are excited to still do a slow build. I mean, it allows us to kind of just enjoy that journey, because you know this too, when you build something for SEMA, sometimes it's not only a rush deadline, but it basically means you don't get to enjoy the build process, right? You just slap everything on and it's done, and it's wham, bam, done, right? So this allows me to just slowly modify the vehicle, enjoy it, and enjoy the different characteristics by adding different things to it. And so I think it's going to be an enjoyable process. I mean, I this is my first formal foray into the overland off-road world. So I got to be honest, like, this is brand new for me. I jokingly tell my friends that I'm going to build the ultimate mall crawler, but who knows, maybe if we get out on some trails, maybe I'll convince some of my friends to take me out and stuff like that. But overall, I've been able to compartmentalize. We are absolutely in love with the truck. We're happy that it's home with us. And again, like I said, we're just happy that there was what I consider to be a pretty positive solution in the whole outcome of everything. And again, like I said, there's still some back channel stuff. There are friends of mine that I think that build corporate vehicles through Ford. So they've kind of escalated the emails into Ford. I haven't been directly contacted by anyone there directly yet. But I'm hoping that maybe we can set up like future like discussions to say what kind of things can they do. Again, like you said a little earlier, to hold dealerships a little bit more accountable, right? It is a franchise model, but you know, maybe there are policies that they can set that minimizes some of these things from happening, you know?
1,000%. And in today's society, with inflation rising and people, you know, struggling as it is, every dollar counts. And I think that's an important thing for them to be mindful of.
Absolutely.
Well, and I want to be mindful of your time. So thank you so, so, so much for coming on and sharing your story. You did not have to do it, but it is powerful and it's really helpful. So again, I appreciate you and thanks again. Oh, and before I let you go, tell everybody where they can find you. Where can they find the man?
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, you guys can obviously follow me on Instagram. I mean, it's probably the most like Facebook I use for more personal family stuff, but you guys can find me on Instagram at Daniel K Song, Daniel K S O N G. And then obviously my other project, which is Driven Mind, DRVNMIND. It's obviously all just motorsports themed motivational content, just packaged in my two passions of leadership and personal development, along with motorsports stuff. So Driven Mind is the other place that you can find me at.
And it's grown exceptionally fast. And I've been a fan and subscriber since I think the first week. So you know, kudos to you on that.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
And likewise, man. Take care.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed today's conversation on the Higher Standard Podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe or follow on whatever platform you are listening to this on. If you like this episode, please write a review and share it with us. We're getting the show up and running right now, so every message, every review, and every note counts. This show exists to showcase what's possible when leaders decide to uphold a higher standard for their businesses, their investments, their families, and most importantly, themselves. If you want to see more of my content, I post daily on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, so be sure to follow me on your favorite social media platform. And with that, it is a wrap. And as always, I look forward to hanging with you all on the next episode.